Good evening. I'm Barack Obama. As you know, Sunday afternoon our time, we finally managed to locate and kill Osama bin Laden. Woo-hoo! Thank you very much. This should give us some closure to the events of 9/11. Though at the moment, unfortunately, Donald Trump is asking to see the death certificate. We had actually managed to find Osama a little earlier, but we didn't want to compete with the coverage of the royal wedding. I do have a few more details, if you'd like to hear about it. I had some disagreements with things that Osama said. He saw himself as living, while I sorta saw him dead. So I sent some Navy SEALs in to shoot him in the face. And once we had him reeled in, gave him a last resting place under the sea. That's where he'll be. We gave him 3 slugs, now he's with sea slugs permanently. Now that he's down there in the dark, a sushi platter for the sharks. He'll swim with sturgeons instead of virgins. What's my next action? How's this reaction? I won't refuse to send a Fox News crew under the sea.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to a debate, should we genetically modify foods? You can hear this program at 96.5 FM, or you can go to axissacramento.org, or you can download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Researchers throughout the public and private sector are using this breeding tool to deliver other benefits to society. Researchers at Hawaii and Cornell University have used it to produce a virus-resistant papaya, a product which has literally saved the Hawaiian papaya industry. Other introductions include drought-resistant corn, virus-resistant squash, consumer traits like a non-browning apple, a low acrylamide potato, and crops that produce oils improved for nutrition. None of these applications require the use of any chemical pesticides, an issue that often gets conflated with this technology. University researchers are working to develop GM oranges that are resistant to citrus greening disease. And here in New York, researchers are using a wheat gene to develop GM American chestnut trees resistant to the imported chestnut blight. Plant diseases annually destroy some 15% of our world's agricultural harvest, a number that is likely to grow as our climate changes. There are literally dozens of other applications in field trials globally. Nitrogen-efficient and flood-tolerant rice, drought-tolerant wheat, and Biocassava Plus, a private-public partnership that will use GM to increase the nutrient levels, shelf life, and disease resistance of cassava, a major source of carbohydrates in parts of the world. Improved cassava harvests could increase the incomes of African households, helping lift poor farmers, many of them women, out of poverty. I could go on, but none of this would be possible without the broad scientific consensus about the safety of GM and solid data to support that consensus. The American Association for the Advancement of Science, the world's largest and most prestigious scientific society, stated in 2012, "The science is quite clear. Crop improvement by modern molecular techniques of biotechnology is safe." They're joined by the World Health Organization, the American Medical Association, the US National Academy of Sciences, the British Royal Society, and every major regulatory agency in the world. Given the realized benefits, the potential of this science, and the documented safety record, I urge you to allow breeders to use this valuable method to improve crops and vote yes for tonight's motion.
Thank you, Alison Van Eenennaam. And the motion is genetically modified food. And here is our final debater to speak against the motion, Chuck Benbrook. He is a research professor at the Center for Sustaining Agriculture and Natural Resources at Washington State University. Ladies and gentlemen, Chuck Benbrook.
I do think it's time for sort of a national fireside chat about the applications of agricultural biotechnology in food production. There's tough choices for our society about whether we want to go down this road of more intensive, specialized, input-intensive agriculture, kind of with genetic engineering leading the train, or whether we want to steer agriculture in some other directions. So a couple of things I ask of the audience as you listen to the back and forth tonight, and there'll be a lot of it. I ask you to vote on the reality of what genetically engineered crops, the ones that are on the market today, have actually brought about. And not just how well they worked for the first 3 or 4 years. And I think the record's very clear. They were rapidly adopted. They worked very well. They were spectacularly effective, and particularly the Roundup Ready crops. And these are the so-called herbicide-tolerant crops, which made it easy for farmers to control weeds in corn, soybeans, and cotton. Those were the three big crops. We'll mostly talk about those tonight. You know, don't base this on the promise and the aspirations of the biotechnology industry and the things that the biotech industry thinks that at some point the science will deliver. Things like corn plants that affix their own nitrogen, or drought-tolerant crops, or nutritionally enhanced crops. I also suggest and ask you to think about the impacts of genetically engineered crops as a package. It's not just the genes that Rob Fraley and his colleagues at Monsanto were able to work into the corn plant, but you have to think about how that corn plant behaves in the field, the yields, what the impacts of the BT proteins that are all throughout that plant are on the environment, on aquatic ecosystems. And of course, in the case of the herbicide-tolerant crops, the great concern is this huge increase in herbicide use that's started about a decade ago and has gotten worse and worse and worse each year. And now the industry and the government has just approved the next generation of herbicide-tolerant crops that are now engineered to tolerate two of the riskiest old herbicides that have been in use for a long time. You'll hear the word 2,4-D and dicamba. This is definitely not a step in the right direction. So we have to think about the totality of the impacts, including we have put so much energy as a country, and the industry has put most of its plant breeding in the GE basket for these herbicide-tolerant crops and BT crops. And there's a lot of other priorities that plant breeders have not focused on as seriously as they should have. And that is a cost of the technology. We're going to talk a lot about safety today. Rest assured, there is no consensus about the safety of GE foods, and there are a number of reasons to be more concerned in 2014 than we were in 1996, the year that they were introduced, or in 2000, which was about the time the adoption of herbicide-tolerant soybeans was very high. And really, with each passing year, as more and more GE plants are grown, as more herbicides are required, the list of both health concerns and environmental concerns is growing, and I'm sure we'll get back to them.
Chuck Benbrook, I'm sorry, your time is up.
Thank you
very much.
We'll get...
And that concludes round one of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, where our motion is genetically modify food. Now on to round two. Round two is where the debaters address one another directly and take questions from me and from you at our live audience here in New York. Our motion is this: genetically modify food. The team arguing for the motion, Robert Fraley and Allison Van Inenem, have argued that genetic engineering of food is no holy grail, but that it is a tool that can be used to help an enormous number of people. They say the proof of this is the fact that farmers have been using it because, in fact, it works for them. They say their safety has been established over 20 years without a single known injury related to the consumption of genetically engineered food, that the studies are a waterfall of support for this argument and also for the benefits themselves of genetically engineered food. And they talk about the possibilities in the future of plants that can absolutely crush plant disease and survive. So a lot of promise about the future. The team arguing against the motion, Margaret Mellon and Chuck Benbrook, they're saying don't look at the future, look at the present. And their argument is that so far, genetically engineered food has not lived up to its promise. It's pulled off a couple of very neat and important tricks, but not all that was promised in the beginning. They say that they're not necessary, that they are not proven safe, and that, in fact, contrary to the other side's assertions, that there is no consensus on their safety. I want to go first to the safety question and take the argument back to Chuck Benbrook, who just completed in your opening statements. Chuck, you said that there is no consensus on this. Your opponents have actually framed the statement that there's no scientific consensus on the safety of genetically modified food as being akin to people challenging the science behind global warming. That they didn't literally say this, but you have to be a little bit of a crank not to buy the science. What's your response to that?
I've read essentially all of these statements by various bodies, and here's what they essentially all say. They use slightly different words. They say that the genetic engineering of food as a technology does not create any new or different potential risks in the modified foods that other forms of plant breeding don't. Several of the reports, including both of the two National Academy of Science reports that specifically address this, say that there is a possibility that genetically engineered foods may pose higher risk of that nature, but we really don't know. And then they all go on to call for further investment in the development of more sensitive scientific techniques to assess the possible risks. And they also call for post-approval surveillance. And most of the recommendations for better science, more careful risk assessment, and post-market surveillance that have been made for over 15 years in these reports have not been acted upon in the U.S.
Great Speeches and Interviews is your source for in-depth information about the economy, foreign peace, climate change, and more. Now with more speeches and more interviews than the leading brand, also contains tasty tidbits of humor and song, fortified with more debates than the other brands, and all comparisons are fictional, broadcast on Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on KUBU 96.5 FM.
To be a great woman.
now, back to the debate. Should we genetically modify foods?
Let's let your opponent, Robert Fraley, respond.
This science has been around literally since the 1970s and had broad applicability to health and agriculture with an impressive safety record. I mean, not a single issue of animal or human safety with the technology. That's because it's inherent that we've been moving genes from the beginning of time, but also I just want to illustrate how important, the regulatory oversight has been. Chuck and I first met when we put in place the USDA, EPA, and FDA oversight, which is still the gold standard around the world, but every country that we ship corn or soybeans to around the world has already done their independent health and safety assessments, as well as literally thousands of academic studies that all point to the same conclusion that's been codified by every major science organization around the world.
All right, let me stop you for a second. I just want to ask Margaret Mellon, do you concede that point or do you refute it?
Well, I think that there is agreement that there is no evidence that the current applications of genetic engineering have dramatic, acute, short-term effects.
No, but the thrust of the argument, and then you can go on to your point.
Sure.
The thrust of his argument is that there's been an enormous amount of vetting going on at government levels around the world, and that this in itself would act as a safety net. Do you refute that sort of vetting is going on?
I think that there's a lot of review that's gone on, and I think that it is focused on the point that I've just made, that there are no acute, dramatic effects of the consumption of genetically modified organisms. Those assessments have left open this notion, two things. One, that there could be subtle long-term effects that we have not identified, and that each application of genetic engineering needs to be looked at separately. So whatever you say about Roundup Ready crops, that says nothing about these new gene silencing technologies that are right up the way.
Okay.
So a blanket assertion of safety isn't scientifically justified.
Allison Vanninen, would you like to respond?
Sure. I mean, as a scientist, I would never make a blanket assertion about safety, and I think it's very much dependent on each particular review. But as a scientist, I let the data tell me whether there's safety concerns. And after 20 years and thousands of studies, and I feel the weight of the thousands of academic colleagues throughout the world that have done these safety studies that haven't found unique concerns, that I have to accept the evidence for what it is and let the data tell me whether it's safe.
Chuck, you said that if you thought that, you would go to the other side, that you're not married to your position, that you're mm-hmm. married to data, because they're saying they have much more data for their position than you do.
A couple of really important points need to be made. The genetically engineered crops on the market today that are being planted by farmers and have been in the last few years are different from the genetically engineered crops that were planted in the early days. Rob Fraley and his colleagues have brought out a continuing series of improved, more effective products. And one of the things that they've done is they've stacked multiple traits into a single corn. One of the big concerns in the scientific community is that the Cadillac GE corn that Monsanto has developed is called Smart Stack, and it actually expresses 8 different traits. So there's 6 different BT proteins that are expressed to control different insects, and 2 genes that confer tolerance to glyphosate, Roundup herbicide, and another herbicide called glufosinate. Well, this mixing of 8 different traits in a single genetically engineered corn plant raises some important scientific concerns, just like when you go to the doctor. The doctor is going to ask you what drugs you've been, what other medications you might be on before prescribing you something else for some other problem you may have. The regulatory agencies, the industry, no one has done any serious research on the potential problems from these stacked traits that are in today's GE foods.
So Allison Vanninen, is that sort of study called for? In other words, your opponents are saying we're getting into so many areas where we've never been before that we should go in a very, very cautious way and try to stay ahead of disaster by figuring out what's dangerous.
Well, I mean, I guess as a breeder, we routinely stack traits. We're always selecting for multiple traits going into.
So this is to you all familiar and old hat. It doesn't feel new to you.
Well, it's breeding. You're always trying to improve multiple traits, and I think I need to understand the scientific kind of hypothesis why stacked traits would be more dangerous when the individuals are not separate. I guess it's like looking at a broccolini, and broccoli's safe, and the other plant that was crossed. Why would a broccolini be more dangerous than its 2 parents? So what's your biological basis?
The debate's not about broccolini, it's about GM foods. And I'd like to get back to what Robert Fraley said about they're accepted around the world. I mean, Robert, you know about the problem your sister company Syngenta has now getting corn shipments into China. In fact, the corn industry is very concerned about the growing rejection of shipments in China and some other countries because of unapproved traits. It's really, I think, disingenuous to suggest that all over the world, all countries have opened their arms to GE crops, when in fact
right,
the
let's,
trend
let's
is
let him
to
respond
close
to that.
It.
Robert Fraley, so yeah, the picture's not so rosy, you're opposing.
I'd be happy to respond to that, although it's someone else's product. But I just want to come back.
I want you to stay on point, because it's right in front of us now that the picture, part of the argument you made was that the ready acceptance around the world, and your opponents just say, not your company, but the product.
Sure, let's talk about it. So the issue is, to get the products sold in the United States, you get FDA, USDA, and EPA approval, but then you get the import approval from all the countries around the world. Syngenta got the approval for every country but China. You know, they got 38 out of 39 import approvals, and there's one more to go, and I know they've been working really hard to get that approval. And, it's unfortunate when there's a market disruption, but it probably wouldn't surprise folks here to know that there's sometimes a little bit of politics and a little bit of mischief behind the scenes, and that's what's gone on here.
Margaret Mellon to respond.
Well, I think it's very important to note how much trade hassle, is associated with the fact that the U.S. continues to embrace and push genetically modified food on the rest of the world, some of whom like it and many of whom don't. In fact, there is, I think, $1 billion of lost sales as a result of this trade disruption that we're talking about. But that's just one of many. I mean, there have been contamination incidents of all kind that have resulted in American crops being turned back. I mean, this is an expensive technology for us to push in today's world.
I'm John Donvan, and this is Intelligence Squared US, Oxford-style debating on American shores. Stay with us.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we recently liberated Baghdad, and we are now looking for new opportunities to use our weapons of mass protection. And to that end, I would like to invite out here my offensive secretary, Mr. Donald Rumsfeld.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, what we have up here is a map of the world, and I believe most of the countries are on it. And I just want to say, the one thing that's really ticking me off is that everyone is complaining about this one country that we did bomb. Yet no one is talking about all of the other countries that we could have bombed and didn't. And I think it's time for a little DOD-style liberation. Don't you, Don?
Well, though we never found any mass weapons in Iraq, to get rid of Saddam was the perfect reason to attack. And now that we did so fine, and there's other nasty leaders in line, why don't we help Rwanda? That would be a good place to start. A bomb, 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 bomb. Help Rwanda, help, help Rwanda. Help Liberia, help, help Liberia. Help Uganda, help, help Uganda.
Then Botswana, help, help Botswana.
Help Guyana, help, help Guyana.
Help Granola.
You mean Angola.
Help Rwanda. Yeah, we got bombs that are smart. Hey, Don. I'm sure there's lots of places that the people would like us to attack. The Russians don't like Putin, and the French must hate that wussy Chirac.
But back in the USA, to the blue states that got in our way, we're gonna come and bomb you, give 2004 a good start.
A bomb, 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 bomb.
California, we might not warn ya.
Hey, Hawaii, we're gonna fry ya.
Hey there, Kankakee, you want a piece of me?
Hey, Don, you see this place right here? New Mexico? I know for a fact they have weapons of mass destruction. Yeah, they're hiding them in a place called Los Alamos.
All the more reason to go get him, Mr. President. But first, let's
help Rwanda, yeah.
That's a good place to start.
And now for something completely different.